Your daily dose of sports talk is here. Highlights, interviews, and analysis. From the entertainment capital of the world, Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does, and great to have you with us on this Wednesday edition of the show. Lots to do over the next 60 minutes on over 270 affiliates across the United States and Canada. Hello to our friends watching north of the border. We just had a request for this show. It's a true story. I don't know why I'm sharing it. We just had a request for a TV station in Belize that wants the show. I swear to God, I could literally show you the text message and email I got on this. So apparently you'll be able to watch us in Belize soon. If you can Belize that. As I said, a lot to do. If you're watching on YouTube anywhere in the world, including Belize, we appreciate you doing so. So we got a lot to get to over the next 60 minutes. As I said, there is a ton of news happening today. Breaking news out of the NBA involving the Lakers and the sale of that franchise just 9 months after the majority stake in the franchise was sold. We'll get into all of that. Kurt Heelan will be here from Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. We'll also be joined by Sam Yarnell in 10 minutes to talk about the NFL. Kyler Murray named the starting quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. We've got that to talk about. And David Ardsma is here because if it's a Wednesday on this show, it means Sports Wrap is going inside baseball. And David Ardsma, the former big league reliever and closer with SiriusXM MLB Radio, will help us do that. Are the Angels the worst franchise in all of Major League Baseball right now? I'm not talking about the records and all that. I'm just talking about in the way they're operated and run. They fired all their pitching coaches yesterday, which is just a bizarre story. Mike Maddox, who's a legendary pitching coach in the game, the brother of Greg Maddox. So we got that to get to as well. But we start things out as we always do on this Wednesday edition of the show. It's time for the big story. And the big story is presented by The Daily Wrap, which you can get Monday through Friday courtesy of Substack. It's our daily newsletter. It's free. All you got to do is take out your phone, scan the QR code on the screen. I know you got your phone in your hand. This is not difficult. Scan the QR code. Just take your camera, point it at it. You'll see a code pop up. Tap that. You're subscribed. Go and do it. It's a great newsletter. Every day. In written form, covering the stories that we're talking about on the show. Check out the Substack Daily Newsletter. I promise you won't regret it. The WNBA continues to be on my radar in the big story this week. Maybe it's a theme. I don't know. Stephanie White came under a lot of fire, the head coach of the Indiana Fever, after Dejanay Carrington leveled a hard foul on Sophie Cunningham this weekend in that Fever Chicago Sky matchup. Because after the game, she came into the post-game presser and said, hey, it's a hard foul, but no problem with it. It's hard basketball. That's, you know, that's kind of the way Dejanay plays the game. Almost sticking up for Dejanay Carrington against those who might say it's a dirty foul, it's an ugly play, all of those things. She got crucified in the media for it. So Stephanie White coming out to meet the media in Indiana before last night's game against the New York Liberty. Listen to Stephanie White. We're not going to edit it. We're going to give you everything she said in her own words. Listen.
No, I'm going to start today. You know, this isn't necessarily for those people that are in this room. This is more for an online community that's trying to create narratives that simply don't exist. Trying to create a fabrication or distortion of who I am, of what I'm about. Our players' success, our players' health and wellness, our players' safety is always a top priority for me. One of the things I pride myself on is my relationships with players. For those who have anything to say about the play in the last game, I didn't see the play in real time. I went straight to a press conference. I thought the play got called right. Thankfully, Sophie's okay. Was it egregious? Absolutely. When you have a chance to watch that, over and over and over on replay, you can see that. I didn't have that in real time.
Were there any
I take personally any suggestions that I don't 100% always have my players back. I ride with them 10 toes down all the time. All the time. They know that. It's a shame that we can't have an opportunity to talk about what great basketball they're playing. Because they are f***ing playing. The reality is, with me, I will always lead with love. I will always lead with grace. I will always lead with humility. And I will always lead with integrity. Doesn't mean I'll always get it right. I'm also human. The hate, the fear-mongering, the divisiveness, the stuff that's trying to hijack our league will not win. It won't win. We are united. We are connected. We will not be divided. Every day these women put their on the line. Every day. When they go low, we go high. Love will win. Grace will win. Humility will win. And kindness will win. I stand by them. I will always stand by them. Everybody else can go to hell.
Okay. I didn't know part of grace and humility and love was telling everybody to go to hell. That's one. Two, there are literally photos of you looking at the play as it happened. Don't tell me, don't gaslight me and tell me you didn't see what happened in real time. Don't. Because that's utter nonsense coming from Stephanie White. And this is yet again another example of people associated with this league that are not ready for the big time. This is what happens when you go from being a head coach in a league that's got four or five beat writers covering it to going into coach a game and you've got 15 people covering it, including national sports people. That's what happens. That, what you just saw, is a manifestation of people not being ready. The too fast, too quick growth of this league. And that's nobody's fault. But for her to get up there and make it sound... She's addressing social media trolls. And she got booed, by the way, last night by her home fans for how she's handled this situation. Stephanie White just looks like somebody who's not ready for the big time. That's what it looks like. And you know what? Kudos to Sophie Cunningham and Caitlin Clark. They gave her a hug, you know, after the pregame introductions. Caitlin Clark, she said she was sick watching the way she got booed. I'm telling you, Stephanie White, not ready for the big time. Plain and simple. That's what this looked like. Banging on the table. We're coming back. All right, I've had my say in the big story. Which brings us to segment two. Segment two. Sam Yarnell hanging out with us. NFL news coming down yesterday, right after we put the show to bed, of course. Kyler Murray wins the QB1 job with the Vikings without taking a single snap in the preseason. J.J. McCarthy will be the number two, at least at the start of the season. So I asked this question yesterday in a Sports Wrap short, Sam Yarnell. And for those who haven't checked out our YouTube channel, the Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel, the place to find all things video related to this show. We have Sports Wrap shorts there. When news breaks, right after we finish putting the TV show to bed, we go on there and talk about it. And that would be Kyler Murray getting the number one job. And I asked the question, Sam, and I'll ask it to you. Is this as much an indictment on J.J. McCarthy as it is a compliment for Kyler Murray?
That's a tough question. It's an indictment on the Minnesota Vikings organization. I'll put it to you that way. I don't think it's an indictment on either one of these quarterbacks as much as it is an indictment. Like, the Minnesota Vikings organization is so much more of a mess than we ever make it out to be. And credit to the star players who have gone through Minnesota over the years, who have played in obviously Hall of Fame careers there, from Adrian Peterson to Jared Allen all the way to Justin Jefferson and the guys on this team now. But man, the talent can only go so far when masking the just organizational just in a certain place. And that's kind of on full display with what's going on in Minnesota right now. My two immediate reactions when I saw this news were this. The first one, I saw online and is a popular reaction among some people. Kyler Murray is going to look so short in those Minnesota Vikings uniforms. He is going to look tiny in that purple uniform. And then the second reaction, they have to trade J.J. McCarthy. There's going to be that sunk cost fallacy of we used a first round pick on this guy and we're only really going to get a day three pick back probably at this point.
Pennies on the dollar. You're going to get pennies on the dollar.
Right. So there's going to be a huge sunk cost fallacy there. But if you're Minnesota, you have to do something. You have to do something. It is ridiculous how a team can go from they Josh Rosen'd him, but like not even Josh Rosen because he wasn't even as good as Josh Rosen. It's crazy what has happened with Minnesota. Someone's got to hold their feet to the fire because I know they got rid of Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and I know they thought that got rid of a lot of it. But man, as much credit as we give Kevin O'Connell, that organization as a whole is an abject disaster.
Well, look,
Jason.
I mean, the San Francisco 49ers had to do something similar with the Trey Lance pick. You know what I mean? I mean, they went and spent a lot of draft capital to get Trey Lance. And then how did Trey Lance work out? And they just cut bait. I mean, that was it. And that's what the Vikings are going to have to do with J.J. McCarthy. The only thing is, the type of way that Kyler Murray plays, you need somebody that can back him up. And if you believe J.J. McCarthy can still play in this league, how willing are you to part ways with a quarterback that you could push in as a starter who knows the system, who's played for Kevin O'Connell, who's played with these guys, who's been in the huddle, if Kyler Murray gets hurt? I say this all the time. One of the most underrated positions in all of sports is backup quarterback and having a capable, qualified backup quarterback. So you cannot do your organization a disservice by not having somebody who can come in and start games if Kyler Murray gets hurt. How many guys start all 16 games every year?
But the backup quarterback is a very specific archetype, and everything we know about J.J. McCarthy shows you that he is not a backup quarterback. He is a guy who, quite frankly, needs the spotlight to be on him and at the same time needs to not have to do a lot in order to achieve success. That is kind of the perfect medley for J.J. McCarthy. He's not a guy who will just fade into the background like you want that perfect backup quarterback to. He's a guy who's always going to say, no, me and Kyler are still competing for the job. When you're in like week six and Kyler Murray has started the first five games of the season for the team and is completely healthy and looks like a freaking, I don't know, top 15 quarterback in the league. Like that's the thing about J.J. McCarthy. Everything that we have learned about him, whether it was during his time at Michigan or during his short-lived tenure in the NFL, he's not a backup quarterback. He doesn't have what it takes to be a backup quarterback.
The question I still ask, and I brought this up yesterday in the short as well, is how do you not at least have them both out there with the ones in preseason games to put them side by side? Because then it tells me this decision was made in March when they went and got Kyler Murray. That there really was, if I have one gripe as J.J. McCarthy, and I know you could say, well, he had all this time to start for the team when he wasn't hurt, obviously. But to me, to not have an opportunity to be put side by side with Murray, who I think is better, by the way, I'm just saying, in the sake of fairness, and I know sports isn't always fair and all these things aren't always fair, but I think he still should have had a shot to be at least placed side by side playing with the ones in a preseason game alongside Kyler Murray.
I think he lost that opportunity with how bad he looked last year.
Yeah, that's the argument some people will make.
The thing is, your resume is always going to be with you in the NFL. It's one of those things. You, no matter what happens, you can always try to improve it or you can, you know, disprove it. But your resume is it's basically attached to your ankle when you're walking around as an NFL player. And the fact of the matter is, Kyler Murray has actually had success in this league. So if I'm the coaching staff and I come in and from all reports that we've seen, Kyler Murray is just making throws and J.J. McCarthy is not making them. Okay, that's all we need to see. If we're going to try to be a competitive organization and a competitive football team and try to keep Justin Jefferson in town, because it started to feel like over the past couple seasons there's been a lot of smoke around that situation, we got to win games, and we got to figure out what's going to win us games in the quickest manner, especially in a division that a lot of people will argue is the hardest in the NFL. If they were seeing Kyler Murray make the throws in camp, you want to commit to him as early as possible so that entire offense knows this is the guy we're going to rally around, and this is how we're going to win football games this year.
First 3 weeks of the season for the Vikings, at home for the Packers, then on the road against the Bears before taking on the Buccaneers in Tampa. Then they get a little bit of a break with the Dolphins in week four. Then they're on the road for the Saints in week five, and week six home for the Colts. So that's how it looks in the early going for the Minnesota Vikings, who to make the playoffs, by the way, if you're wondering, they are plus 150 to make the playoffs this season, Sam.
Yeah, I wouldn't play them to make the playoffs, but I'll tell you, if you are going to play them to make the playoffs, you need them to win at least one of those first three games, and that is why they're going with Kyler Murray, because I don't think J.J. McCarthy gives him a shot in any of those three games. Kyler Murray gives him a shot in at least one of those first three games that you mentioned.
Minus 178 to miss the postseason for the Minnesota Vikings. Sam, we'll see you next week. We're coming back. We got more to do on the show. David Ardsma is here. We're talking baseball on Sports Wrap Inside Baseball next. Welcome back to the show. Wednesdays on Sports Wrap means one thing. This guy's here. The one and only David Ardsma.
The best looking contributor you have. Just straight up. I am going to say it. Hey, look at the beard. Way grayer this time.
Thank God we fixed that mess.
I didn't mind it. I liked it like 3 days after the coloring. Then it looked good.
This looks good. This looks normal. This looks natural.
When I go to the club, though, I don't want to, like...
Yeah, that's true.
I want to stand out.
Yeah, I get it. David Ardsman's here. He talks baseball with us every week as Sports Wrap goes inside baseball with the former big league reliever and closer. You may have seen him on the Little League World Series doing the regional in San Bernardino over the last few days. Did a nice job with that. I saw him on social media eating like massive steaks. He might as well have just eaten the whole cow. Might as well have just eaten the whole thing. I mean, they should have just put the cow in front of you.
It was beautiful. It was so good.
God, it was massive. Make sure to weigh that protein. All right. So, David Ardsma, let's talk baseball. This first thing I wanted to talk to you about was this news out of the Angels, which are, I mean, they're the laughing stock of baseball right now. You've got the Angels who have decided to fire the entire pitching staff, basically, including Mike Maddux, who's one of the longstanding, you know, the guy, one of the pitching gurus around baseball that's been around the game for a long time. A lot of respect for that guy. And I'm sure you have a lot of respect for that guy, I would think.
Absolutely.
What do you make of the Angels basically blaming the entire pitching staff on their troubles when, frankly, the problems with that organization are much deeper than that?
Problems are much deeper. The thing about it is you can't fire the players all. You can't just go fire all the players. You can't just go magically, you know, snap your fingers and get a whole new pitching staff that's going to be better. But you can get a new pitching coaching staff and at least give it a shot. You know, Mike Maddux is incredible, has had one of the best runs as a pitching coach in all of baseball. Sometimes you just need a new voice, a new idea. The thing that constantly John Mozeliak is talking about. So I'm just going to say this. I am a massive John Mozeliak fan. I think he did incredible work at St. Louis. I think he was judged upon a standard that wasn't reasonable at some points, where they were still a good team and they were expected to be a World Series contender. So he gets fired. And again, sometimes you just run out of time. You just got to go somewhere. The dude's done nothing but win everywhere, you know, like with the Cardinals. And then he goes to the Angels and he's going to have to figure it out. Part of that, though, Mike Maddux, is that they weren't using pitching data the way the pitchers were wanting them to be used, or stuff like that. Like kind of like those wordings, like you're not using it enough. I think there's a delicate line in using pitching data and using just realistic, just go out there and get the job done, figure out how to fight and compete and stuff. But young players nowadays coming up from high school, from even middle school, high school, college, to minors, to the big leagues, want data, see data, know data, and expect data. And if you're not using it, at least as a tool in your tool bag, that's a problem. When I was with the Blue Jays taking over the pitching coordinator kind of roles, Like, that was part of my job, was to introduce pitching data. We had pitching coaches that wanted nothing to do with it. We had pitching coaches that were like, heck yeah. And like the guys were like, heck yeah. I'm like, all right, tamper a little bit, use it, but as a tool. The guys that don't want it, I'm like, guys, if you don't want it, like, the problem is the pitcher on the field is expecting it. So if the Angels pitchers are expecting it and they're not using it, that's, I have some issues with. But I would expect Mike Maddux to know this stuff. So him and Daryl Scott, Don Chitty, the bullpen coach, they all got fired. New staff coming in. I don't think anybody's going to be better than Mike Maddux. At the same time, if you're not doing what the GM's doing, wants you to do, I don't care what your name is. If the GM's telling you to use pitch data, you use pitching data.
When you look at the mess that is the Angels right now, especially post-Ohtani, how much time do they have to fix it? Does, you know, your guy, you know, the GM that you love, how much time does he have realistically? Do you give him 3 years? Like, how long does it take to fix it? Because you're not just talking about what's going on at the major league level. You're talking about redoing it in the minors, changing the philosophy there. You're talking about drafting. You're talking about the international pool. It's a lot to get your arms around. How long do you get?
4 years, 4 years as a GM. And the thing about that is, because this isn't the NFL where it's like draft and sign free agents and find a head coach. It's not that simple. It's not the NBA where it's even more simpler than that. It is, yeah, you have to build your minor league organization, but you start by hiring a minor league or a minor league coordinator. You start by hiring a draft coordinator. You start by hiring a director of the draft, director of international scouting. It is a massive undertaking. And that's where GMs do the really good work, is hiring down below and then letting those guys make those decisions, those small decisions on who we draft, who we sign, all those things. And that slowly builds up into an organization that's run. Like, the Brewers didn't start at the big leagues. That started in the minor leagues, international signing. They built a new facility. They're doing X, Y, Z, a million different things down below. And then at the top, you know, Pat Murphy's sitting there going like, hey, this is awesome. Like, who's the next Miz? Let's keep going. But you don't realize how much work underneath. So John Mozeliak is very good at building that system. But the problem is the Cardinals weren't giving him the money, and then he ended up leaving. The Angels, Artie Moreno, like, you have to really invest in the minor leagues. He's done – I actually am going to give a lot of credit here. The Angels have done an incredible job of trying to get big leaguers to go to the Angels and to win. They've just been incredibly unsuccessful when they get those players. Like, – Albert Pujols, huge deal. Anthony Rendon, giant deal. They went out. Greinke was an Angel for a little bit. Like, they're almost every name in Major League Baseball has been linked with the Angels trying to get or get Josh Hamilton. I mean, there's so many players that they've gone out at, in the past and tried to bring in and try to overturn this thing. It's just the least successful of them at the same time from a draft standpoint. They've had very few really successful drafts.
In the last 45 seconds of this segment, how difficult is it, though, when you're the little brother to the Dodgers, especially with all the success that they're having, to bring in talent? Because if you're going to go play in L.A., you'd rather go play for the Dodgers. You're not going to go play for the Angels.
Dodgers only have 26 spots.
Yeah, it's true.
They only have 26 spots. I don't need the Padres can compete. The Diamondbacks can compete, and they're the little brothers. Mm-hmm. The Angels just have to, one, update that facility there, update their facility here, regrow the minor leagues. It takes time, but you need somebody who's been there, done that. Mozeliak might be the first GM in a while who's really been there and done that.
Yeah, and look, Artie Moreno, you know, had some fleeting ideas about selling the franchise a couple of years ago. You wonder if a change in ownership also would be a catalyst for this organization. David Ardsmas is hanging out with us. I got more to talk about with him. We'll get to a few things in the next segment, including Tarik Skubal, the Red Sox slumping. We'll get to it all next as Sports Wrap goes inside baseball. Welcome back to the show. Sports Wrap goes inside baseball every Wednesday with David Ardsmas, former big league reliever and closer. All right, rapid fire here. Tarik Skubal making his first home start for the Dodgers this week. Wasn't great. It's kind of funny. The Tigers have been going one way since they dealt Skubal, and the Dodgers were kind of going the other way. Now they've won a few games in a row.
Right.
what's it like for Scooble in this situation to go from the only place he's ever known in Detroit to Los Angeles to the bright lights of the Dodgers and everything that comes with that, facing the National League, which, yeah, I know they play interleague, but it's not the same thing. There's a good chance in an interleague series he's not even starting because it's only a few games. The difference now for him and the adjustment that has to be made here.
The biggest thing is going from being the big fish in a smaller pond to a big fish with giant fish around you and not having to have the pressure and stuff. So sometimes people pitch really well with that pressure. Sometimes they don't like, you know, sometimes it's different going out there for the first time in his career, not having like to basically throw a shutout to win a baseball game. And so things change. He's throwing actually harder in LA right now, but his walks are up, his strikeouts are down. So it's a little off and on. He might be over pitching trying to do it. He might be just not quite comfortable. The mound in LA versus the mound in Detroit are totally different. Guys, these are completely different setups, mounds. Everything looks a little bit different. And a very big factor that people never talk about is working with a new catcher for the first time. You know, working with two new catchers for the first time and a rookie catcher, you know, like Dalton Rushing, like you're trying to figure out this, like with who's a catcher, what's the right flow, what do I like to do, new pitching coach, new everything. So a lot of things are new. Let it get flow a little bit. Let them get on their sink. It hasn't been excellent, but really at the same time, the Dodgers haven't been all that excellent. They started playing a little bit better. I'm not worried about the Dodgers. I let them go in the little like streak where they're not good for a couple games, like not good, but the Dodgers are going to be just fine. Tarik Skubal, I actually think he's looked really good, maybe overthrown a little bit.
All right. Move to the Red Sox. They went on a stretch where they were 30-5 over a 35 game stretch. Now they've lost four in a row. Regression to the mean, reason to be concerned. They get Rutschman into the lineup. Obviously, not enough for them last night against a Jays team now that's trying to claw their way back into the wild card in this crazy American League wild card picture where really only three teams are eliminated from the postseason out of all these teams in the AL. What do you make of what the Red Sox are going through right now, having lost four in a row?
And the way these teams are streaking, you never know. One of those teams might decide to just turn a corner and win 16 in a row and be right in the middle of it. I'm not too worried about the Red Sox. It could be a little bit of regression in the mean, but really, it's the offense hasn't been coming up. Three runs, one run, three runs, three runs. That's the only difference. Where before it's 13, 12, 4, 14, 8. Like, you're just putting up these crooked numbers. And now we're just seeing the offense kind of come back. The pitching actually hasn't been bad at all. I still like the pitching staff, what they've been doing. You know, Ronald Chapman came back to earth for a little bit, you know, giving up a couple runs. And so I'm not worried about the Red Sox, the way they're losing. I'm not too concerned about it. If we start seeing a 6-0, a 7-0, that's a concerning piece to me.
Texas, the Tigers, the Twins, the Guardians, the Orioles, the Blue Jays, and the Mariners are all within four games of each other for that third wild card, with the Rangers holding the spot only a half game better than Detroit, who is still amazingly very much still in the thick of things. By the way, they have a plus 89 run differential. How are you 59-60 with a plus 89 run differential, which goes to tell me that that number doesn't mean anything. Who's going to wind up with that third wild card as of August 12th, David Ardsma?
Toronto Blue Jays.
Wow. Really?
Out of all those teams, now again, I love the Rangers. And I was a big Ranger fan. A lot of teams to leapfrog, but they're 2.5 games back. That's just constantly winning 2 out of 3. That's just 2 out of 3. Guys, just win a series. Go out there, win 2 out of 3. I don't even need you to beat everybody. Just win 2 out of 3, and you're going to be fine, and they will win a playoff spot. That team is, they've been there. They've done that. They have a ton of talent. Out of every one of these teams, man for man, they're a better team than everybody else. They know how to win. It's just they haven't been winning, and you just got, again, 2 out of 3, guys. They're 6-4 in their last 10. If they're 6-4 here on out, they're in the playoffs, and they're leapfrogging the Boston Red Sox probably at that point. As long as they're 6-4 every 10, they're going to be just fine. They're picking up two games on everybody.
I keep waiting for somebody to break out of that pack. I mean, it's the middle of August, and nobody is
going
for it.
I'm going out on a limb here, but you got to think, like, are the Blue Jays better than the Orioles? Yes. Like, man for man. Are they better than the Guardians? Yes, outside of third base. Are they better than the Twins? Absolutely, every single position. Are they better than Tigers? Now, yes. Are they better than Rangers? Almost every single position. Maybe not second base or whatever. Like, just man for man, I can't look at that team and go, like, what's going on? And if Vladdy gets on a hot streak, they're going to go crazy. Kyle Raleigh, the only wild card here is if Kyle Raleigh decides to start hitting the ball, Kyle Raleigh and that Mariners team will might.
You bring up Raleigh. What do you attribute this to? How can you go this far backwards 12 months later?
You know, the really interesting thing is I think some people were pointing online saying during the World Baseball Classic, didn't get dabs. Like, yeah, that's fun. Sometimes you have some vibes like that. I don't anger the baseball gods, but I get it. Everything's regressed incredibly. Batting 100 points less, you know, 45 home runs less than whatever at this, you know, like some crazy numbers. Really what I look at and what I see is his swing is the same speed. He's barreling the balls. It's just the exit velocity for some reason is so much less. And his angle is so much less. So as the ball's coming off the bat, the angle of the ball, it's just way less. And so those two things combined is like you're not hitting the ball as hard. If he hit the ball as hard, he'd be crushing it.
I always appreciate you, my friend. Thank you, as always. Congrats on the work during the Little League World Series over on ESPN on the regional in San Bernardino. Good job.
Thank you.
We'll tie it all together with some odds and ends coming up 10 minutes from now. Been a busy show today. Sammy Arnell was here. Talk about the Kyler Murray deal. Not usually here on Wednesdays. David Arzma is always here to talk baseball on Wednesdays. Always appreciate his contributions. I did not have Kurt Heelan on my calendar. The pro behind Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com is joining us. See, we can't see the shirt. And you should be showing off the shirt. There it is.
Vancouver Grizzlies, baby.
That is awesome. Will Vancouver ever get another NBA franchise, by the way?
Highly unlikely if they're putting one in Seattle again. I'm not sure they're going to overlap the markets like that. But it's unfortunate because if you poll older NBA writers about the city they'd most like to get a team back, that might be at the top of the list, man.
Big news out of the NBA that I don't know if any of us saw coming. Bob Iger and Joshua Kushner, yes, the younger brother of Jared. They went to Jared. Bob Iger and Joshua Kushner buying the Lakers from Mark Walter for $12 billion with a B dollars after Mark Walter just bought the thing like 9 months ago. He makes $2.5 billion on a 9-month investment in the Lakers. Make this make sense, Kurt Heelan.
I wish I could. I it's such a out of the blue trade because or sale because Walter has owned the Los Angeles Dodgers in the city for years, right? He has not sold that team. He's revamped them, obviously, and they've done pretty well. And he's already, like, when he came in, he revamped their adding and building out, we'll put it, like the scouting staff that really wasn't there and the depth of the front office. They brought in a bunch of people to work with and under Rob Pelinka. So, like, it wasn't like he was static. He was taking this team and building it out like the Dodgers.
They blew out the Buss brothers. I mean, you know.
Right. They still owned 15% of the team, and Genie was officially the governor.
Right.
But this was Mark Walter's team. To see it flip like that, I don't know. I mean, it is a $2.5 billion profit. So it's like, yeah, there's some logic to just flipping it that fast and getting out. Like, that is some... That's good pocket change. Good work if you can get it. I will add though, his investment companies are under investigation, or his TW Capital, his big company, is under investigation for potential insurance fraud tied to some companies they own. I don't know if those are related. It just seems the timing seems interesting.
Yeah, to say the very least. And Iger's a basketball guy. You know, he's a fixture at Clippers games. I'm sure you've seen him there. Yep. You know, Kushner and him coming in.
Huh? Kushner owns a piece of the Heat and used to own a piece of the Grizzlies. Like, he's owned pieces of teams before. And these two went together recently and bought a piece of the Giants.
But here's the thing. They were thought to be in the mix to buy a franchise in Las Vegas.
Yes.
The expansion franchise that will ultimately wind up in Las Vegas. Is it just a situation where they said, well, how high could the bidding have gotten in Las Vegas if it gets to a point where they say we're better off just buying the Lakers at this price than buying and starting something from scratch in Las Vegas?
Look, the price for buying in, and we'll see what it ultimately ends up being, but you are talking so much, like, what is a $4 or $5 million buy, $4 million maybe buy-in, like the what they're going to have to pay is the billions they're going to have to pay is an expansion, and like what these teams are all going to make, it's going to get ridiculous. Plus, you're going to have to build up, you know, build out the franchise. I think, though, I'm not sure if it's that or the fact that you're buying the Lakers. Like, it's expensive, but you are buying the premier brand in the United, like in basketball. You are buying an established product that is loved by a huge fan base around the globe. This isn't buying the Memphis Grizzlies, with all due respect to the Memphis Grizzlies, right? This is buying an iconic brand, and that might be worth the price when they got into it, more than trying to build that kind of thing in Las Vegas.
How does this change, real quick? How does this change then the state of play for who winds up with the franchise in Vegas?
There were multiple bidders there, so that obviously opens the door to potential other bidders. I know that the Knights owner
does
was
Foley. Does Foley still feel like the favorite in Vegas?
That is the name I hear the most, but they've kind of done this quietly. And, unlike you, I don't run in the high finance billionaire circles. So I'm not sure who all these people are.
All right. NBA schedule. Our friend Vlad messaged me the other day when the schedule came out. He says to me, I know they're a fixture at noon on Christmas Day, but how are the Knicks not on in primetime on Christmas Day?
That's a really good question, because I thought they'd get bumped back, but I think it's an established, they want to play at noon Eastern on Christmas Day as the Knicks, and so that's where they're going. The primetime game is LeBron James now coming back to Los Angeles to play the Lakers on Christmas Day at, you know, I think it's 5 Eastern. So, like, that's the big game, but I was writing a different story on scheduling. The Knicks and the Spurs, right?
Yes.
Knicks and Spurs. So that's Victor Wembanyama's one trip to Madison Square Garden. That is a huge deal. That probably should be more in primetime, but they're going to leave it. They're going to leave it at the noon start. And my wife will be thrilled when I'm trying to turn that on at 9 in the morning Pacific time and end Christmas. So
I've got 30 seconds. And I know you work for NBC Sports. I get it. A 3:00 East. This is not baseball.
Yeah.
A 3 p.m. Eastern game between the Celtics and Pistons. Really?
They wanted the triple header. That's how you make it work to go in the time slot. And I think you're going to get, look, there's still a real anticipation, and that's still Cade Cunningham versus Jason Tatum. It's a good game. I think you're going to get people to tune in.
Oy vey. Kurt Heel and Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Wednesday. Friday, I promised this last week, Friday's show, because I'll be traveling. Last vacation, getaway, before the start of football season, and then we are full steam ahead until basically March Madness. So, got to take the break when we can. So this weekend, we're doing one of these little weekend getaways. So, before we go, a couple of reminders. Friday, we've got the entire conversation I had with Linda Cohn last week for you. That will be Friday's episode of Sports Wrap, talking about her career at ESPN, what happens next, what she's doing now on YouTube, and some of the top stories in sports. That with Linda Cohn on Friday's show. Couple of reminders. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast. If you have not signed up yet for the podcast, if you have not subscribed yet, what are you waiting for? The audio version of this show available Monday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. Do that today. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel is the place to find all things Sports Wrap with Jason Page. The Monday through Friday TV version of the show, 45 minutes, all the commercials stripped out, waiting for you every afternoon on the Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel. Sports Wrap Originals, Extended Conversations, Sports Wrap Shorts, all available there. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel. Subscribe today. We've also got the Sports Wrap website, sportswrap.tv, sportswrap.tv, right there above my head. Go and check that out. The aforementioned podcast, the webs, the YouTube channel, Sports Wrap Shorts, access to the daily newsletter, the Daily Wrap on Substack. You can just go to the website, sportswrap.tv, sign up right there. It's easy. And you'll have access to the daily newsletter. You could also send us comments. There's a section at the bottom of the page for that. Find your affiliate and more only at sportswrap.tv. And without any further delay on this Wednesday edition of the show, it's time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends. Kudos to Matt Hasselbeck, who made news today. Announcing that he had recently taken place in a study over at Boston University. BU is the leading research school when it comes to CTE, this terrible, hideous diagnosis that so many people receive post-mortem because it can't be diagnosed in the living yet, that leads to dementia. It's got connections to ALS, suicide rates, all sort of mental illness. That can derive from CTE, and it is prevalent in football players. And we're finding out it's prevalent in hockey players as well. So what Matt Hasselbeck did, the former quarterback, is now 50 years old. Matt Hasselbeck put himself through 2 days of tests at BU to try and help them study the brain, image the brain, map the brain more, try and figure out a way to diagnose CTE in the living rather than having to wait until somebody passes away. Also, Matt Hasselbeck has decided he's going to donate his brain post-mortem for studies in CTE. A great gesture by Matt Hasselbeck. And look, this is something that's going to continue to hang like a black cloud over the NFL until we figure something out. And the folks at BU are on the leading edge of trying to figure out what causes CTE besides repetitive brain hits, you know, repetitive head hits when you're playing in football. And who would know that more than a quarterback? I think Matt Hasselbeck said he had suffered 3 concussions before he even started playing organized football, something like that. It's a scary thing. So hats off to Matt Hasselbeck on this decision. To try and help from a scientific standpoint players who are playing now and those that will come in the future. Odds and ends, CBS rolling out its broadcast crews for the upcoming season. And the worst kept secret is that Tony Romo won't be part of that crew, but this guy will. J.J. Watt! J.J.! It's going to be fun watching him with Jim Nantz this year. He was part of the number 2 crew last year, I believe, with Ian Eagle. He gets bumped up. He'll work with Nantz this season on the NFL broadcasts. And they still have to figure out what they're going to do with this guy. I don't know what they're going to do with Tony Romo. Hello, friends, by the way, Mr. Nantz. They got to figure out what they're going to do with Tony Romo. And I would imagine they'd like to get that solved sometime before the start of the season, but they say there's no rush, which means they're trying to negotiate a settlement. How do they both find a graceful exit from this deal, which still has like 4 years and $75 million on it? Something the folks at CBS will have to figure out. Also deserves to be mentioned, friend of the program, Ross Tucker, elevated to the number 2 crew this year. He'll work with Ian Eagle, who he had worked with previously on Westwood One radio broadcasts, or audio as they call it today, audio broadcasts of the NFL. Hats off to Ross Tucker. Congratulations to him. Well-deserved. He has been around this game for a while. He played it. He's talked about it. He was a host on SiriusXM NFL Radio back in the day. He's filled in for Dan Patrick. He's been going on shows like this one. All the best to Ross Tucker. Congratulations to him. Well-deserved. And that's going to do it for us on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. Busy show. I don't know where it came from, but sometimes they come together that way. Sam Yarnell, thanks to him. David Aardsma, former big league reliever and closer, as Sports Wrap went inside baseball. And on late notice, Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com for breaking down the Lakers sale to Bob Iger and Joshua Cushman. It's going to do it for us. I'm Jason Page. We'll catch you back here on Thursday for an all-new edition of Sports Wrap. Bye-bye.